Welcome to Ink in Your Veins. I'm your host, Rachel Herron. In this podcast, I talk to authors about the best things they've learned about writing so we can try those things too. I'll keep each episode short so you can get back to writing. Well, hello, writers. Welcome to episode number 420, don't say anything, of Ink in Your Veins. I'm Rachel Herron. I'm so glad that you're here with me today because this is a special episode. We are talking about the fact that yesterday, it was my day before yesterday, it was my 8-year anniversary of being self-employed. 8 years ago, it was my first day of not having a grown-up job, of just having my own job that I had created for myself out of my brain. And it was terrifying. And I always love when people do those wrap-up episodes, those lessons that they've learned. So this is going to be one of those 8 lessons that I have learned over 8 years. So stick around for that. I just let the dog in the office. So if you hear crunching, she's chewing on one of those plastic bones. I hope you can't hear it. But it's also a very friendly sound. So if you do hear it, that's what it is. All right, what's going on around here? First, a couple of big things. Rachel says, right, is changing. I'm changing a lot of things. Not a lot, but a few. And I am moving toward more joy and ease and more support around my own writing. And a cool thing about this is that this particular change is going to add more support to your writing if it is something that you want. For years, Rachel Says Write has been $39 a month. And for that, you get to write twice a week, 2 hours at a time with me if you want, if it works into your schedule. It works for a lot of people. Other people come and they go and then they get busy and then they come back and they do more. It has always been a super special, beautiful place to be. What happens is I usually give a little quote and I check in with everybody there. And then we write for 2 hours. In the middle, I whisper in your ear that it might be a good time for a little break. And then if you are still around at the end of the second hour, we have a little bit of a chat about how it went. But it's always been open door. You can come in late. You can leave early. You can come in for 10 minutes and leave and then come back for 10 more minutes towards the end. That's been fabulous. And I just fired everybody. I just refunded their money if they'd already paid for April. And I'm redoing this. It is now $2 a month. You sign up for it over at patreon.com/Rachel. If you join my Patreon as a patron at the $2 a month or up level, then you get not only the essays that I write every month, and oh, I just wrote such a good one that's going out very, very shortly about building my first and maybe only Adirondack chair ever. It's my first woodworking experience in many years, maybe ever also. And that essay is going out soon, but you get not only that, but you get to come to Rachel Says Write as often as you can. The reason I'm lowering the price is because I'm making the scheduling of it easier for me. For years, I've done it in the afternoon because that's what can be supported around my classes. My classes just ended and I am, again, giving myself more support. So how Rachel Says Write is going to work now is that if you join, then every week I'll send through Patreon my calendar link and you can look and see when I am writing at the desk with the Zoom on. Those times will change. That's a really exciting thing. Like some days I might have an appointment downtown and I won't be able to do it on this day, so I'll do it another day. I might want to write in the morning this time and in the afternoon on another day. It'll always be between 2 and 8 hours a week. I won't open Zoom for all of my writing times because sometimes I'm doing things like reading things out loud or things that just don't lend themselves to that. But I'm going to open Zoom for most of them because I have found that I do exponentially more writing when I am doing that with somebody else, especially when I'm writing with people that I care about, other writers that I care about because they have become part of my community. This is a way you can become part of my community even more so than you already are and write with me sometimes. I will tell you that for the most part, these will be morning hours for New Zealand. Those change a lot as our time zones fluctuate because throughout the year, we dance 2 hours closer to the Northern Hemisphere and then 2 hours away. We are a day ahead. You will never have to work out anything like that because I will send out the calendar invitations in Calendly, which does all of the automatic time zone conversion. But generally, my mornings look like U.S. afternoons were early evenings, and evenings for Europe, and very early probably for most of Australia. So sorry, Australia, but maybe you're an early bird. And those times will move around. So you can go check that out. Sign up for that at patreon.com/Rachel. And I am so excited about that. It's going to be super fun. That's changing. Another big thing to say before we get into the 8 lessons learned over 8 years is that Unstuck is launching. If you haven't hit the pre-notification button, I would love it if you did. Oh my gosh. That's over at rachelhiron.com/unstuck. This is the Kickstarter, the memoir about moving to New Zealand. I pledged to Sasha Black that I would launch that on April 1st. I seriously don't know how I'm going to do that. That's 3 days from now. And it's Easter weekend and I want to take some time off. But I don't care. I'm going to do it because I'm scared. I'm scared of doing it. I'm going to set it up for 21 days. There will be extra podcasts around people that are awesome and how they came unstuck during that time. And I'm just excited about pushing that button. I'm also really scared. I've never done a Kickstarter, brand new, first time for everything. So number 3, I just wanted to report that I am feeling better physically. I don't know how much I've shared about my neck and shoulder and back pain that I've been struggling with for a few years, but it had gotten really, really bad. It's not really linked to my migraines, although every once in a while the pain will trigger a migraine, but I've been going to an osteopathic person. I don't actually even know what that means, but my doctor recommended him, and he's apparently Lawrence has been working since the dinosaurs and he knows everything. And he has given me these tips and tricks and I've just been holding my body wrong. And he gave me simple ways to hold my body and simple exercises. And oh my gosh, for the last 3 days of sitting at the desk, I've not had any pain. I have a little bit of cramping in the back of my neck for using the strong muscles instead of the weak muscles, but that feels good compared to pain. And I'm just so excited. I'm a person who thinks that chronic pain is just something to be endured. And sometimes it is. Sometimes that's all we can do. But this particular piece of pain, oh my goodness, I'm so hopeful. I'm so hopeful that this continues. So I wanted to share that. So if your body needs support, how can you get that? Can you go to a doctor, an osteo, whatever the heck that is? I love acupuncturists. Physio is huge in New Zealand. Don't even know what that is. Can you read a book? Can you talk to a friend? Can you get a massage? Some things cost more money, some things cost less. But there's a ton of YouTube videos over there. Don't hurt yourself, but please, you deserve to feel good. You deserve to not be in pain. Absolutely something I forget. So you deserve to be not in pain. And I wish that for you. All right, let's jump in. I think that's all the stuff I wanted to tell you. Let's jump into 8 lessons learned over the 8 years. I have notes, but I'm not going to read anything. I just have a list of 8 things here. This is the first lesson I learned when I quit the day job, when I took that terrifying leap into midair, nothing to support me. I left early because my mother-in-law was sick. I left a few months early. And about a month after I quit my job, my wife lost her job in one of the dot-com recession type things that happened 8 years ago, whenever that was. And I was just thinking about that this week. I probably never would have left my job. I would still be a 911 dispatcher. I'd probably still be drinking. My body would be in so much worse shape. I would never be sleeping because I worked 48-hour shifts and was up all night all the time. And here's an honest truth. If my job had not been changing the way it was going to, I knew that in 2016, in July, my fire dispatching center was going to take over police. I had worked for the police many years before, and I would never go back to doing it in the United States. Morally, I could not work for the cops. So I had to get out. If that had never happened, if they had not made that shift, if I had not needed to quit by July, but I ended up quitting in March, would I still be there? I don't know. I sometimes pride myself on being brave enough to take that leap, but I kind of had to. Was I brave enough? Doesn't matter. Now I'm just so grateful that number one, I left. And number two, I left when I did, because if I'd stayed until July, Lala would have lost her job and I would have been more terrified. I probably would have stayed because I would have never given up those kind of benefits. As it was, we were able to be with my mother-in-law while she was sick and dying. And just as Lala's COBRA benefits ran out, she got a new great job, which she had all the way up until we moved to New Zealand and a year into living in New Zealand until she lost that one. She's still now building Shopify sites. So that's amazing. That's not what I learned though. When I quit, I wondered if I, this is number one, I wondered if I would work hard enough to justify being a self-employed person. So in that first year, I'm sure I talked about it on this podcast, and there are always people going through the backlist, which is funny. So maybe some of you in the backlist have heard this recently, but I used an app called Toggle to track everything I did. I turned on Toggle every time I worked on a project, every time I looked at email, every time I worked on the podcast, anything I did, I tracked it. From that, I learned that a natural working pace for me was about 45 hours a week at the desk doing this job. And to me, that felt about right. That felt, I'm going to say, a little bit punitive, right? How dare I? How dare I leap and work for myself at this job that I love so much? Might as well put in some extra hours because that's what I should do to deserve this. And it is true that I am somewhat of a workaholic sometimes, and I can work too much. And at the end of that year, I remember realizing and looking at my spreadsheets and the charts and the graphs that Toggle will provide to you, and thinking, and just, you know, again, patting myself on my back, look at how hard I work. And I thought, my Lord, why am I doing this? My boss is so mean. She's terrible. I don't have to work like that. I had in that year proved to myself that I, quote unquote, earned my spot in my seat, and I would do what I wanted to in the time I wanted to do it. It has generally worked out that I work about 38 to 42 hours a week, most weeks. Sometimes I work more and sometimes I work less. My goal, and I've said this recently also, and I'm not there yet, but I'm hoping to get there. My goal is to work 9 to noon and 1 to 4. So 6 hours a day with an hour break in the middle. So a 7 hour workday with an hour break. That's really kind of a Kiwi workday right there. I'm trying to fit into my society. But there is that 30 hours? That must be 30 hours a week. Sounds great to me. And here's the truth. All around that time, like right up until 9, I'm doing writerly stuff. I'm writing in my journal. I'm catching ideas. I'm reading over breakfast. I'm perhaps, like I was this morning, on an incredible writer Zoom call at 6 in the morning. So things like that happen. But I think for me, 30 hours a week would be ideal. Yesterday, I got up from the desk at 4. I've been trying to quit at 4. I got up at 4 and I took a hike. This is ridiculous. I took a hike. I just went out walking with no plan in mind, but there's all of these. I'm surrounded by hills and green space because that is Wellington. If you go any direction, you will run into trails and hills. And I hiked 30 minutes one direction through the villages, streets, past houses. And then I went up this hill and kept climbing up this hill and went all the way up to Skyline Walkway, which I've lived here for over a year and I've never made it all the way up to Skyline Walkway, oftentimes because the wind is too strong and will knock you down. But yesterday it was only like 50 or 60 kilometers an hour, which is a nice soft breeze for Wellington. And I got all the way up to Skyline and then I walked along Skyline Walkway and then took a whole circle down. I went down towards the grocery store and went back home. It took an hour. This was an hour walk. And in this time, I was on the streets, you know, houses, walking past beautiful old houses. And then I was in the hills. And then at the top of the Skyline, I looked around, I turned around. And from this one point on the walkway, on this trail, I could see the Wellington Harbor, the Wellington, what do you call it? The channel where the boats come in, separate parts of water. I could see the Cook Strait, which separates the North and the South Island. I could also see a bit of the Tasman Sea. And I could see the South Island clearly because even though it was a little bit cloudy, the clouds were high and I could see the South Island rising on the other side of the water. I could see all those different kinds of water as I turned around in a 360. I could just, we're on this tiny edge of a tiny island on a little spit and it was gorgeous. And I did that because I quit work at 4 and went for a damn walk. And that was one direction I could go. The other direction, I go up this, you know, you get it. You get it. It's a great place to walk. And that is work too. And it is work. Actually, now I'm laughing about it though. I listened to 3 podcasts during then because I like to listen to podcasts on fast speeds. And I fed my happy input and I got so much information and it was just gorgeous. So I work hard enough. That is what I've learned. And I could work less hard and still be worthy. I could not work at all and be worthy, although that is a conversation I don't even want to have. So, but it is true. All right. Something else. Number two, the thing I've learned as a full-time writer, I do not get more books written because I am a full-time writer. My production has slowed down. I do not know if this is a function of age or if it is a function of work always expanding to fill the time you give it. So when I was working those 10 years that I was working full-time and writing full-time, I was writing about 2 to 4 books a year because I needed to, because I was on contract, because I was on deadlines, because I was trying to make money, because I was trying to pay off debt. And now I don't have to do that. I write books as I want to, at the speed that they come out. It's more like one a year. On average, over the course of my career, I write 2 books a year, all the way across. But in the last 8 years, we'll say, talking about these last 8 years, it's more like one book a year. And that is fine. I do not get more books written, but I do get more things done. I play with things. I experiment with things. I get the podcast done. I teach. I get new classes made. I play with ideas. I have more fun and I have more time to have more fun. But if any of you are thinking, if I could just give up the 60 hour a week day job, mine was more like 60 to 80 hours a week minimum, then you'll write more. You won't. You won't. Many of us are more productive the more busy we are. I am less busy now. I get fewer books done. And that's also absolutely lovely. I feel like I have more sense and less panic. I ran on adrenaline for a very long time. Also not good for the body. I do not run on adrenaline. I wear this Aura ring, which is a sleep tracker, but it also measures your heart and your steps and all those things. And I occasionally look at those. And the other day, I noticed that my bank had taken out we redo our mortgages every year or 2 years. There's no such thing as a 30-year mortgage. So we had just refixed and I noticed they'd taken out our mortgage twice. And so I just called them and I said, oh, you made a mistake. Took out our mortgage twice and let's just fix that. Can you refund me that? And he goes, oh no, you set it up for fortnightly. And I was like, no, I didn't. I remember talking to the person who helped us. I told them that I wanted to pay the same amount per month that I was paying just on this new loan. So that would not be double. That's not fortnightly. We pay once a month because we still have an American mindset like that. Most people here pay either weekly or fortnightly. And I said no. And then I pulled up the paperwork that they had sent me that I had signed and it said fortnightly. And I had a heart attack. And then the man just said, oh, okay, no, I'll change that. I can do that. And I said, you could do that. And he changed it and we're fine. We're absolutely fine. The point is, later on, I was looking at my Aura ring to look at my sleep. And I noticed that in my activity, my heart rate had gone too high, like as if I were climbing a mountain at that point. And I remember when I worked for 911 and when I lived in the Bay Area, adrenaline was always coursing through me. Adrenaline, cortisol, I was always having moments of fear. And literally at 911, there were just moments of terror, especially when we were sleeping. We would be paged up and this beeper's going and you've got to go answer someone screaming, you've been asleep, and then you go from that. So I remember that feeling of my heart rate spiking and then coming back down and how uncomfortable that was. And I had to laugh. Like that was, I sent it to my wife. I sent a picture of it to my wife. I'm like, this is where the bank said the word fortnightly. That's what my heart did. And my heart doesn't do that anymore. Less panic, more sense, more ease, fewer books, but a better life. So that's number two. How much will I get done as a full-time writer? Fewer books, greater happiness. Number three, I have learned that I love teaching more than I ever thought I would or could. I have learned that the connection I make with my students is everything. I like to think that my books are the greatest work of my life you know, fabulous. That's great. I hope that we all feel that way. Sometimes I do feel that way, but I honestly, truly, heart of hearts, think that the work I do with other people to help them write the book of their hearts is the greatest work of my life. And I am beyond honored to be able to do it. I can't believe that I get to do it. I will continue doing it. I'm not teaching 90 Days to Done or 90 Day Revision for a little while, but I'm still teaching another little kind of super secret class for graduates of those classes. And I'll be teaching in different ways coming up here. And the connection that I make, the connection that they allow me to have with them is incredible. I was saying goodbye to my graduates day before yesterday at our last class for the session. And I told them, as I usually tell them, I love them. It's not hyperbolic. It's not, I don't think it's creepy or weird. I love them. I love them, not as a group. Well, I do love them as a group. I always love them as a group, but I love them individually. I know their stories. I know their hearts. I know the things they struggle with. I know the things that they glory in. I love also, I love being in the trenches with them. There are plenty of writing teachers out there who teach more than they write. There are plenty of writing teachers out there who have never actually written a book. That is so weird to me. That is so weird to me that there are writing teachers out there who teach writing, but they have never written a book, or the only book that they've written is about writing. And different strokes for different folks. Those teachers, I am sure, some of them are phenomenal and also change lives and also just have an incredible connection with their students. But I tend to trust myself more the teachers who I have worked with who are dirty. They're on the ground wrestling in the mud alongside me. They're saying, I don't know. I don't know how to do this. This sucks. Let's try to figure it out. And I love knowing that my students know that I am also, when they're revising, I'm revising. When they're first drafting, I'm hating first drafting and trying to get through it. And oh my goodness. So that grads class that I mentioned, I got home the other day. No, I'm sorry. I came out of my office, and on the table in the kitchen was this huge bag. They had sent me everything you need to make sourdough bread from my favorite bakery in Wellington, which is a sourdough specialist. They only do sourdough. And there was a starter, a mother there. And then a few hours later, I got flowers. I don't need, but where are my flowers? Okay, there. This was one of the posies. If you're looking on the YouTube, which most of you are not, but they sent me, they don't need to do that. And they blessed my heart by doing that. And I know that I'm sounding overly sentimental, but it's not overly. This morning, I will tell you, I was talking about William Aperin's incredible book. The last time that we talked, and this morning we had a launch party for him, and I got up at 5:30 in the morning so that I could be at the 6 a.m. launch party with people that I love to tell Bill what an amazing story he had told with his book. And I never knew. I never knew. This is what I've learned, that teaching is incredible, absolutely incredible. And I always thank my friend Mariah for asking me to coach her. She was my first coaching client. And I will always thank my friend Jay Thorne for saying, just teach a class. Don't stop teaching at Stanford and Berkeley. Just teach your own classes. What are you doing? So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Number four, I have learned that by being a teacher, it has been an incredibly selfish act because I have gotten so much better at the craft of writing. Teaching writing teaches you to be a better writer. When many of us start to accept that we want to be writers, we have this kind of romantic vision in our head that we will write and our words will be, if not beautiful on the first round, at least by the second round, we'll make them beautiful. And that is the thing that we are passionate about and that we love, because we read books, because we love words. We love the way sentences are crafted. We love the way books are built. We love the way words make us feel. And therefore, when we sit down to be a writer, we should be able to make sentences with words that make us feel amazing to read. What no one tells anybody is that the thing that really matters in a book before you start to lay down beautiful sentences is that we need to figure out what this book wants to be, how it wants to come out, how the characters are going to change because they must change, and how do we do that in an organic, believable manner while still keeping the reader's interest. And all of that character motion needs to be supported by a story structure which gives the emotional journey to the reader that they want, not that we want, but that they want, that they expect. The words, making beautiful words, that's like the last thing we do. That's, you're 2 years into a book and you might be thinking about, well, you know, everybody's timing is different. You may be 2 months into a book and you start thinking about that, or you may be 2 years or 10 years, 15 years into a book and you are finally able to start thinking about making the sentences beautiful because all of the scenes are in the right place and because the characters, you've allowed them to grow into the people that they need to grow into in order to be in this plot. And we're talking memoir and fiction here, same exact thing. And having to find words to explain how this works for years, for the last 8+ years, because I was teaching a little bit before I left the job, has just, it's such a superpower when I look at my own work that I'm able to see so much more clearly where I can make it stronger. That said, I will always need developmental editors to tell me where I am missing, what I could be doing better, because we can't see these things. We can't see a lot of these things in our work, but we do get better at seeing more of them. So that has just been something I have loved learning, is that teaching improves my craft. Number five, again about teaching. Teaching has made me really truly know on a deep gut level that writing is, as we talk about on this podcast and as I talk about in all my classes, it's about emotional management. It's not about time management. It's not about discipline. It's not about talent. It's about emotional management. And how do you finally truly realize on a deep cellular level that on the days where you are supposed to write, but you don't feel like writing, how do you learn to do the writing anyway? And on the days that you are supposed to do the writing and you really feel like writing, really excited about it, how do you do the writing that day? How do you learn on that cellular level that the emotion you feel about writing that day, about both your energy that you have for it and the acceptance or criticism levels, that those things don't matter? They absolutely don't matter. All that matters is you should sit down and do a little work. That's where the inspiration comes from. It's, as I said to a couple classes this week, it's not even about emotional management. It's like emotional non-management, emotional unmanagement, saying that it doesn't, I don't have to wrangle my emotions. I don't have to be in a mood to write. I don't have to want to. I don't have to not want to. I don't have to feel good about it. I don't have to feel bad about it. Whatever I feel is fine in this moment. And I sit down and I do a little bit of work. That's how books get finished. That's how they get done. We accept that the romantic vision of sitting down and letting beautiful words pour out of our fingers doesn't exist for the most part. Every once in a while, we'll get that moment of flow that is incredible. But for the most part, it doesn't exist. However, what I have found is that embracing the fact that I write no matter what, on the days that I'm supposed to write, I don't write every day, but on the days that I'm supposed to write, I write no matter how I'm feeling, unless I'm sick or in grief or something like that. There are exceptions. But otherwise, I sit down and I write. And that in itself, this very workaday nature of me being a writer, and I sit down and do an hour to 3 hours of writing, 3 hours max, that's become romantic. That's the romantic notion now. I have changed from wanting and desiring free-flowing ease and inspiration always to understanding that that's not real life. It's kind of like going from the hot and heavy romance that is all lust and just sheer excitement at the, you know, the very onset of a romantic relationship into true romance, which is loading the dishwasher, even though it's not your turn, because you saw the look on their face when they remembered it was their turn to load the dishwasher. That is not sexy, but it's so romantic and so loving and so beautiful. And that's what I have learned, is that teaching this over and over and encouraging students over and over that it doesn't matter if they feel like they're doing the worst work in the world, it just matters that they're doing some work. It has changed my own brain and my own brain patterns, that when I think, I've screwed this up way too much, I can't fix it, and I don't have the energy to even try today, I hear my own voice in my head saying, okay, that's all right. You don't have to fix that. You don't have to change that. All you have to do is sit down for 20 minutes and look at your project. Turn off the internet, use Cold Turkey Writer, put your phone in another room, and in 20 minutes, you can get up. And then, of course, in 20 minutes, I don't want to get up because now I'm having a better time than I was complaining in my head. So teaching that, learning that teaching has rewired my mindset around writing, has been incredible. The sixth thing I have learned in 8 years of being self-employed is, I'm going to swear here, so if you got littles in the car, go ahead and turn it down. Here we go. Fuck the market. Fuck the market. I'm done swearing. The market bedarned. I believe that writing to market is a great way to go for many people. Sure, they're fast writers. They can pump out the books. They can pump out really great books and make a lot of money. That's not going to be me. I can pump out books quickly, and they are good when I do that. And I'm miserable when I do it. I've done it, and I don't want to. I can also write to market. I've done it, and I don't want to. I'm miserable. What I need to do, it's only taken me this long to figure it out, is write what I love and make it work. And we do live in such an amazing time that I can write whatever I love. And if I want to publish it, it will be published, period. Maybe my agent will sell it. I am lucky enough to have an agent. If I want her to try to sell it, or like Unstuck, I choose. I do not offer it to her. I am choosing to keep it and self-publish it, because that's what I want to do with this book. I wrote it. I love it. I'm self-publishing it. Oh my gosh. It makes me so happy. And we all have that option to have our book published, period. We did not used to have that. When I started this gig, 2008, we did not have this option. And now we do. And it's real and viable and beautiful and exciting. And when I'm writing what I love, I keep writing. And of course, I'm not saying that I love what I'm writing all the time. I write what I love. And for a lot of the process, I am unhappy with my skills, unhappy with my choices, unhappy with every decision, and basically unhappy with lunch. Just unhappy. What fixes that? What always fixes it is doing a little bit more work. I do my work for the day. Most days I feel better after I've worked. It's almost always. Sometimes it's not true, but almost always I feel better after I've worked than I did before I worked. And isn't that incredible? And then if I keep doing that, I get books. You get books. The market, to me, doesn't matter. That is what I've learned. I need to write what I love. And then I figure out what to do with it. Related to that is, I have learned not to worry about making the right decision. There is no right decision. There are no right decisions. There are, of course, right decisions, like don't step in front of that speeding car. Great. That's a good one. But I and a lot of writers spend so much time thinking about, well, should I do this or should I do that? Should I write this or should I write that? Should I self-publish or should I try to get an agent? Look, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. You can spend a while trying to get an agent. If it doesn't work, rejigger. You can just decide to self-publish and hire a developmental editor. Great. You could self-publish and then try to go for an agent, although it is harder when the book is published. You probably want to do that on the next book, but you know, your mileage may vary. What we do is we don't make the right decision. We just make a decision and we make it right. Many of us writers are overthinkers. We've got that high Clifton Strengths intellection. Many of us, which is great. Our brains always want to think. They always want to think for longer and they want to get deeper. And they will always, when asked to work on a problem, they will always come up with a new, better answer. Always. There's never a point where your brain will say, oh, good job. You have figured it out. This is the best answer. Your brain will say that for about, for me, it's about 18 hours. 18 hours later, after I've made the best decision of my life, my brain, maybe it's my soul will whisper, hey brain, you want to think about that a little bit more? Do you think you could come up with an even deeper answer? And my brain says, yes, here I am. I'm going to do it. And it comes up with a brand new answer. And now I am confused. We have to stop that thinking loop if we are those kind of overthinkers. We have to remember there is no right decision. There is only a decision. We make it right. We make it work. The only wrong decision is to not interrupt that loop, is to not do the work because you're so caught up in planning the character or the chapter or the book or the series. Oh my God, we just need to write the paragraph. That's all we need to do. Write 4 paragraphs and you're done for the day. Yay. No more decisions. Just go a direction and then make it right. That's one of the biggest things I have learned in the last 8 years. Don't make the right decision. Just make a decision. Stop the thinking cycle and make the decision work for you. And number 8, the biggest lesson I've learned over the last 8 years is it's trite. It's a cliche. Leap and the net will appear. Leap and build your wings on the way down, Ray Bradbury. Leap and figure it the F out. I am still learning this. I'm still scared. I'm scared to change so much this year. And I'm also constantly thinking about the times that I have done this in the past, when I have just leapt, when I quit the job 8 years ago. And this was my 8 years ago. This was my first week working for myself. And I did not know if we would make it. And we did. We have, and we will. I'm thinking about when we spontaneously basically said, yes, let's move to New Zealand. Okay, let's do it. And then Unstuck is completely about what happens after you decide to make that leap and you leap into nothing and you leave everyone you've ever known and loved behind. What happens next? I'm thinking about the time that the front porch in Oakland, it was always full of junk. We didn't have a garage there either. And it was always full of junk. And I cleaned it off one day and I just wanted to make a beautiful space. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but I just wanted to make a beautiful space. It was too hot to read out there, or it was too cold. The windows didn't open on this front glassed-in porch. It was just a place to pass through. It was a passageway to get into the house. And it was embarrassing that it was always full of junk. So I spent a weekend cleaning it off, making it beautiful, taking it into a beautiful spot nobody would ever sit in. And within the week, I had found a dog and the dog had had puppies. And not only was that porch then full of mama dog and the two puppies, because our dogs didn't want a stray dog and puppies in the house. Not only was that porch full of them, but the porch ended up being full of my family and friends all the time for the next 12 weeks. There was always somebody sitting on a porch, drinking coffee, having a glass of wine, playing with puppies. I made a space. I made this vacuum and something filled it. Who knows? I would never have known to expect puppies ever, 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 ever. And perhaps in making the space this year with this leap in whatever way this looks, I'm going to get puppies. I don't actually want puppies. My puppy is finally not a puppy. But I don't think I mentioned this on the podcast last week. If I did, I apologize. I feel like I've read it out loud somewhere recently, but I heard Seth Godin talking on a recent Tim Ferriss podcast, and he was talking about his podcast, Akimbo, an old podcast that he used to run. Seth Godin says, I did 5 years of Akimbo. It was in the top 1% of all podcasts, and then I just stopped. And I stopped not because I didn't love it. I did love it. I stopped because if I kept doing it, there's something else I wouldn't do instead. and creating a vacuum is required so that I will do the hard work of filling the vacuum. But if I just keep doing the thing, then there is no vacuum. Y'all, I was walking down the street in Wellington and I stopped. I had to stop, pull over, pull out my phone, and write that down. Creating a vacuum is required so that I will do the hard work of filling the vacuum. I feel like I'm creating the vacuum. I'm clearing the porch. Whatever's coming is something I'm not expecting. And isn't that amazing? Something better, bigger, more beautiful is coming. Or maybe it's smaller. And it's going to be more beautiful. It's not going to be less beautiful. But I don't know what it is. I have no idea. And Tim, bless him, kept pushing on the podcast. And he's like, well, what do you do? What do you do when with this vacuum time? Are you like, what are you planning to fill it with? And Seth said, chillingly and awesomely, he said, quote, if there's something pending, it isn't a vacuum. If there's something pending, it isn't a vacuum. And again, I was still walking down that street in Wellington on my way to the gym. And I realized, oh, I'm trying to fill in the vacuum before the vacuum arrives. I have just stopped teaching this week. I am moving into new things and focusing harder than I have in a long time on writing because teaching is my love and it takes a lot of energy and it takes time away from the writing. Even though I'm always writing, I want to write more. I have lists upon lists of the things I want to get done. So with those lists, I know that I'm trying to fill in the vacuum. And I'm also remembering that this eighth thing that I have learned is that the net appears, we build our wings. I have no idea what's going to happen. And it's going to be awesome. I cannot predict a thing. And wow. Also, 8 years, I've been doing this podcast. I've been doing this podcast for a little, I think I was doing the podcast just before I quit the job. If I'm right, this is episode 420. And yeah, I wasn't sober when I started the podcast, was I? And look at how it's grown and changed. It's now ink in your veins. I am now living in a country in a town I never dreamed. I mean, I did dream about living here, but we had never thought it would actually happen. I have a dog I had never met before. I had never built an Adirondack chair, which is sitting up on that hill, facing the incredible sky and the houses of the valley that's over the top of our house. If you get the Patreon essay, it's going to be in there, pictures. So those are the eight lessons that I have learned. Do I work hard enough? Hell yes. Will I get more work done? Hell no. I love teaching way more than I ever thought I could. I am a better writer craft-wise because of the teaching. I am a better writer mindset-wise because of the teaching. I don't give a crap about the market anymore. I just want to write what I love. And there are readers like me who want to read that. I don't worry about making the right decision anymore. I just make a decision. And I also try to remember over and over and over again that if I leap, the net will appear. The net is not going to appear if I stay in bed and think about leaping. I could stay in bed and think about leaping all day long. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being my community. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Please be on my writer's list if you are not already, because all sorts of cool, weird things I might try this year. RachelHeron.com/write. You're probably on it. I hope you are. And if you'd like to write with me starting this week, I can just tell you, if you're listening, in April, we're going to be writing together in US days, April 1st, April 3rd, and April 4th. If you join patreon.com/Rachel at the $2 level, then you'll get the calendar and just got the Zoom link right there. You just click and boom, there you are. We're writing together. So I'd love to have you. I'd love some new faces in this beautiful community that we have built. And I really am thankful for every single one of you. And I'm getting mushy, so I'm going to go now. Happy writing, my friends. Thank you for being here for 8 years. Bye. Thanks for joining me on this episode of Ink in Your Veins. You can reach me at my website, rachelheron.com, and you can also support me at patreon.com/Rachel, R-A-C-H-A-E-L, where I have all sorts of great stuff for writers for as little as a buck a month. And do sign up for my free writer's email list of encouragement at rachelherron.com/write. Now, get to writing, my friends.